Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller, and together we're learning Masechet Moed Katan. We find ourselves on Daf Tet Vav Amud Bet, that's 15b, and we are three lines down in the wide lines. I accidentally left off a very brief section at the end of the previous sugyo. We were talking about mourners are not allowed to wear sandalim, ni'ilata sandal, they're not supposed to wear leather shoes. The last line there, I just happened to realize that I left it off the recording, said, Mitzora mahu binilata sandal. Can a mitzora wear sandalim? And the answer is teku. We don't know. We'll wait for Eliyahu to come and tell us. So just cleaning up business from our last recording. So we're continuing discussing things that are forbidden to mourners. We have a list of 13 things that mourners either have to do or not do to express their mourning. And in each case, we're asking whether or not that rule also applies to a mitzora and to a menuda. To a mitzora is a person who has the disease of tzaraz, and a menuda is an excommunicated person who has been ostracized by the beit din in a community, either for not following a judgment of the beit din or for doing something egregious. The four lines down in the wide lines, we continue on with this list. Avel asur b'tashmi shamita, a mourner is forbidden to be intimate with their spouse. Dichtiv, as it says, and as it's written, we have a different source here. It's a source from Shmuel Bet, Yud Bet, but a different place. Vayinachem David bat Sheva. David comforted Bat Sheva, Ishto, his wife. Vayavo elaha, and then he came to her. So the idea is that he came to her intimately after he had finished comforting her. That is, once she was no longer a mourner, he went to her in an intimate way. Michlal, Dimeikara Asur. What we learn from this is that before he comforted her, it was forbidden for him to go into her intimately. Menuda Mau Batashmi Shamita. What about an excommunicate? Rav Yosef Tashma. Rav Yosef says, come and learn. Kol Otan Shanim Shayu Yisrael Bamidbar. All those years that the Jewish people were in the desert, they wandered in the desert for 38 years, and then there was a year in the beginning, a year at the end. Menudim hayu, they were considered to be like excommunicates. That is, they were excommunicated by God. He had ostracized them. Vishimshu mitotehen, but they had sex with each other. They were allowed to be intimate with each other. Tosus asks how we know this to be the case, but he says it's pshitalan. We know that they were intimate with each other because they had children and people continued to be born. So they must have, for those years, been able to be with each other. So we might learn from this that an excommunicate is allowed to be intimate with their spouse. Amar le Abaye says, V'dilma menuda l'shamayim shayni. Abaye has said this several times already, but you'll see there's a twist here. Abaye says, perhaps in that case, when they're wandering in the desert, they were excommunicated by God. Perhaps that's different than being excommunicated by the Beit Din. They're not exactly the same. But he says here, Dekayil. So he says it's more lenient. If you're excommunicated by God, you're allowed to be intimate with your spouse, but when you're excommunicated by the Beit Din, you're not allowed to. But the Gemara goes ballistic for this. Kail, you're going to say that it's less restrictive if you're excommunicated by God? First of all, that doesn't make sense. It should be more restrictive if God puts you in Nidui. But then, the Ha'amart, Chamir, but the last time Abaye, in fact, the last two times that you made a distinction between a person who was excommunicated by heaven and a person excommunicated by on earth, you said that it was more stringent. You yourself said it was more stringent. So Abaye answers it very cleverly. Sfuke misafgale. He said, it's a matter that's cast in doubt, meaning we know that there's an important distinction between being excommunicated by God or excommunicated by the Beit Din, but we're not exactly sure how it works. Zil hacha, if you go in this direction, kamad chile, I push off your argument by saying that it will be more stringent. Zil hacha, you go this way. Kamad chile, I push it off by saying it'll be more lenient, meaning all I know is that the two cases are not the same. So when I need to, I'll suggest perhaps it's more stringent. And when I need to, I'll suggest perhaps it's more lenient. But the cases are still different, so we cannot conclude one way or the other. Mitzora ma'u b'tashmi shamita. What about a mitzora as far as being intimate with their spouse? Tashma, come and learn. We had this earlier in our masechta. D'tanya, as we learn in the Braita, v'yashav michutz la'alo. The mitzora is supposed to dwell outside of his tent. Shiyehei kemenuda b'meito, that he should be like a person who's excommunicated from his home. Ucha avel, and like a mourner. So here we have all three together. Ve'asur b'tashmi shamita. and he is forbidden in Tashmish HaMitah. So the Gemara says, Ve'ein Ahalo, when it says he shall dwell outside of his tent, the word tent, Ahalo, Ela Ishto, that refers to his wife. In other words, in the Ohel, as we described it earlier in the Masechta, is a place of intimacy and privacy. And when it says that he goes into his tent, we're saying that he goes to be in an intimate space with the person with whom he's intimate with. Shenemar, as it says, and we have a proof in this, Lechem or Lahem, Moshe, Hashem says to Moshe, go tell the Jewish people, Shuvu Lechem lo Alechem, go return to your tents. Because we know that the Jewish people were not allowed to have sex with each other for 3 days before they received the Torah. And now after they receive the Torah, Hashem says, go back to your tents. In other words, you're allowed to be intimate with each other again. Shema Mina, so come and learn from this. Now, we did deal with the issue of Mitzora and Tashmish HaMitah earlier in the Masechta on Zayin Amud Bet, and we talked about whether or not a Mitzora would be, his Simchas Yom Tov was more connected to being able to be with his wife or to being with his community, and if it was to be with his community, then it would make sense that he'd be able to go into the community on Yontif, and if it was with his wife, he has to stay outside the community, but she could join him for Yontif. We talked about all of that, but the primary discussion there about the Mitzora was what we call Yimei Chiluto, during the days when it's not clear if he's a Mitzora or not. Sometimes the Kohen comes to look at the lesion on his skin and he's not sure if he's a Mitzora or not. So he makes him wait 7 days and then he comes back to see if he's really a Mitzora or not. So during those days, some of the restrictions of a Mitzora fall on him. So we ask the question, can a Mitzora do Tashmish HaMitah during those days? And the predominant opinion was yes. But here we're talking about Yimei Taharo, during the days in which the Mitzora is going through his purification process, and that is a whole different question. Okay, so since, however, we compared the Mitzora here regarding to Tashmish HaMitah, we compared him to both a Menuda and to an Avel, so the Gemara asks, Finishot Nami le Menuda, so why don't you also learn the answer here, answer the question for a Menuda, that a Menuda is an excommunicate, is also allowed to have Tashmish HaMitah, to be intimate. Amar Avuna Breder of Pinchas Mishmei Rav Yosef. We've seen this answer already. Mikatani Sha'asar Shiyehe Kemenuda V'cha'avel. Who taught that when it says he's forbidden like an excommunicate and like an avel, B'milei Acharnisa, it's referring to other matters, not to this matter, not to the matter of Tashmish HaMitah. They're similar to each other in other ways. V'asar Nami B'Tashmish HaMitah, but the Mitzora is also forbidden in Tashmish HaMitah, but that doesn't apply to the Menuda. Okay, now we're up to our last halacha, which says, Avel eino mishaleach karbenotav. An Avel is not allowed to bring a karban to the Beis HaMikdash during the time of his Shiva. And this, we learn, it's true of all 7 days, but it's learned as a connection between Aninut. This is one of the main definitions of being an Onen, is that you cannot bring a karban. And Avilu. Ditanya, as we learn in a Braita, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Shimon said, Shlamim, when you bring a Shlamim sacrifice, Bizman Shehu Shalem, it's brought in a time when a person is Shalem. You have to be Shalem in order to bring a Shlamim. Velo Bizman Shehu Onen, and not at a time when he's an Onen. Now we're assuming here that an Onen, and usually how we define Onen, is that that's a period of mourning between death and burial, and it has specific rules. And once a person undergoes Kvura, when the burial is complete, then a person becomes an Avel. And the rules of Avel and Onen are not quite the same. However, it's not 100% clear. For instance, the Rambam really believes that Onen and Avelut are fundamentally the same. They just have slightly different practices. Okay. Menuda Maushi Yishlach Karbonotav. So we know an Avel cannot bring Karbonos the whole time of his Shiva. Can an excommunicate bring them? Amar Rav Yosef Tashma. Kol Otan Sharim Shayu Yisrael Bamidbar. Back to the Jewish people wandering in the desert for 38 years. Menudim Hayu. They were like excommunicated before God. Vishalchu Karbonotan. But nonetheless, they brought Karbonot. We know that they offered karbonot while they were in the desert. So we should learn from here that an excommunicate can offer a karbon. Amar le Abai, but Abai says, V'dilma menudu l'ashamayim shayni. Perhaps an excommunicate from heaven is different than an excommunicate on earth. And he adds here, Tekayil, it's more lenient when you are excommunicated by God. The Gemara goes ballistic on this again. I mean, obviously, the flow of it is, this case just came up, but if you look at them each independently, it would be shocking. Kail, you're going to say it's more lenient to be excommunicated by God. The Hamar Chamir, but you said earlier that it was more stringent to be excommunicated by God. So he answers, Fuki misafkale, it's an area of fundamental doubt. There's a safek. Umadchile, so I push you off in either direction you go. When it serves my purpose to say that it's more lenient, I say it's more lenient. When you say it's more stringent, I say more stringent. But the fact of the matter is we don't know if they're the same. We know that there's a big distinction between being excommunicated by God and excommunicated by a Beit Din. Mitzora ma'u she'ishlach karbonotav. Last case, what about a mitzora? Can a mitzora send karbonos? Tashma detanya v'acharei taharato. Now here we're going to quote a pasuk. We're going to quote it seriously, in serial fashion, meaning in different phrases. The pasuk comes from Yechezkel Mem Dalet, and it's Psukim Chavav and Chav Zion. So it's 44th chapter of Yechezkel, verses 26 and 27. What it's talking about here, it's talking about mourning in Kohanim. So it says here, and all the rules related to Kohanim, and it says, V'acharei taharato, after the Kohen becomes pure. So the Gemara says, what does this mean? Achar prishato min hamet. This means if a Kohen becomes tame because of contact with the dead, he has to undergo a 7-day purification process. So that's what acharei taharato means. It means his purification process from contact with the dead. Now then it says, shivat yamim yisperu lo, 7 days he shall count for him. Now, you would think that this means the 7 days in which he is becoming pure after contact with the dead, but our Gemara is going to explain it as a different case entirely. They say, Elu Shiva Yimei Sfiro. These are the 7 days of his counting if he is a Kohen who is a Mitzora. That's how they understand it. Uviyom Bo'o El HaKodesh, the next phrase says, and when he then comes to the Beit HaMikdash, because he can't go into the Beit HaMikdash when he's Tamei, so he has to wait for the end of his purification process to go back to the Mikdash. This is El HaChatzer HaPnimit, so what it means to come to the Mikdash is the inner courtyard, the place that's, you know, where only Kohanim can go. And then the Pasuk continues, L'sharet BaKodesh, to serve in the Beit HaMikdash, that is to do the work of the Kohanim. Yakriv Chatato, then he can bring his Karban Chatas. So, what does all of that mean? You flip the page onto Tetzayin. Zu asirit haifashalo. This is a special offering that a Kohen Hedyot brings at the beginning of his service when he is, his Chanukah, his Mechanchinoto, when they inaugurate him or, you know, install him as a Kohen. So he can bring this carbon once he becomes pure. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, that's what Rabbi Yehuda says. So, according to this, a mitzora cannot offer a karbon until after they've completed the 7-day process of purification. They have to be as pure as a kohen would need to be in order to go into the Beit HaMikdash in order to bring a karbon. However, Rabbi Shimon says, Bivo'o, when the pasuk says is Bivo'o el HaKodesh, this means Yakriv bizman shera'ui lebia ra'ui lahakrava. Bizman she eno roi labia, eno roi lakrava. In other words, when he is ra'ui labia, when he's able to come into the Beit HaMikdash, then he is ra'ui for hakrava, and that's when he can bring a karbon. Bizman she eno roi labia, when he's not able to come into the Beit HaMikdash, eno roi lakrava, he's not able to come, he's not able to offer a sacrifice. Now, it seems to me that both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon fundamentally agree that a Kohen has to be pure in order to bring a Karban, and then we can extrapolate from the case of the Kohen to the Mitzora. So I don't think they disagree about this halacha. I think the disagreement is in how they read the Pesukim and exactly in what they think each phrase is referring to, but fundamentally I think the halacha is the same for them. So this concludes the inquiry that we've been dealing with now for maybe the last 5 or 6 recordings, in which we introduced 13 specific observances, which I'll review now. 13 specific observances that mourners are either supposed to do or not do, and we also asked whether or not they apply to excommunicates and to mitzvahs. So here it is in brief, and the Art Scroll has a nice chart on 16A1 that's useful. So these are the and they also break them into prohibitions and obligations. So we'll follow their chart. The first one was related to haircutting. All of these are apply to mourners. They're either forbidden to do, haircutting is forbidden, or they're obligated to do. The question is, well, then they apply to a menuda or to a mitzora. So haircutting is forbidden to all three. That's number one. Number two was, actually the first one that was brought was tisporet. Yeah, that's haircutting. The second one was atifat harosh. Oh, that's why they put atifat harosh in an obligation. So it's a mourner is obligated to wrap their head, and so is a mitzora. But it's not clear if a menuda has to. There, a mitzora is more severe. The next one is putting on tefillin. An avil is not allowed to put on tefillin the first day, but we're not sure about a mitzora or a menuda. The next one is greeting others, she'ilat shalom. And we know that a mitzora is not allowed to greet others, but a menuda is unclear. So that's a second case where mitzora is more severe than menuda. Studying Torah is forbidden to an avel, but it seems to be permitted to both a menuda and a mitzora, as we learned. Doing laundry is forbidden to all three of them. Working is forbidden to a mourner, permitted to a menuda, as we saw, that they can be hired out and hire out workers. And a mitzora, we're not sure. Bathing is forbidden to a mourner, but unresolved for either a mitzora or a menuda. Ni'ilat ha-sandal, wearing sandals, is forbidden to a mourner, but not clear what the law is for a menuda or a mitzora. Sending sacrifice, marital relations, tashmish hamita, is forbidden for a mourner and for a mitzora. That's the third case where a mitzora is more severe than a menuda. For a menuda, it's unclear, so they might be the same, but it's 100% clear that a mitzora cannot do tashmish hamita, and it's not clear for a menuda. The final case was sending sacrifices, which is forbidden for a mourner and forbidden for a mitzora, so that's the fourth case where a mitzora is more strict, or more there's more chumras for a mitzora than for a menuda. For menuda, it's unresolved. Related to the obligations, we mentioned atifat harosh, wrapping the head, which we don't do. The other one is tearing kriya, rending a garment, which is obligated for a mourner and for a mitzora, because it says it clearly in the pasuk, but for menuda, it's not clear. And for overturning the bed, which we also don't do anymore, but the halacha in the Gemara was that even though a mourner is obligated to do it, we're not sure if a menuda and a mitzora are supposed to do it. Just mentioned briefly, this obligation of rending kriya is mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch in a different place, meaning when the Shulchan Aruch in Shin Pei 380 in Yoredeya, when he talks about the things that a mourner is allowed to do, all the different melachos, he mentions basically 11 out of 13 of our categories that we mentioned in the Gemara. There are two that he doesn't bring. One is the karbonos are not mentioned, and the second one is tearing kriya, because tearing kriya is put into a different category in the final halacha as something that is done at the moment of death and not part of the nihugi avelut. We'll stop there and continue with a new section in our next recording. Have a wonderful day.